Good morning and welcome to the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton on WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brunel. Brunel University, that is, in Gainesville, Georgia. We're delighted to have you with us today. As always, we talk about the issues that you have been talking about, and we bring in an expert who can bring us up to date on what we really need to know and hear. And today we have a wonderful relationship counselor, Barbara J. Peters. We'll talk with her in a minute. First off, say hi to my ever-present co-host, Christina Rhodes. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing fine. And, you know, you and I often talk on this program about people who just will not accept limitations, which I guess we could say is sort of your mantra, isn't it? Your personal mantra?
I really appreciate people that aren't willing to accept those limitations and willing to challenge themselves and kind of go above and beyond.
Don't let anybody else say what you can do, what you can accomplish, or what you can't do.
Right.
It's okay when you're a kid, your parents have the right to tell you that. But after that, you decide for yourself. Right. Well, the story I was thinking about this morning was the story that's been in the news for the last couple of days. I'm sure you've been following it. The story of Diana Nyad, who was attempting to break a swimming record that she had set previously several years ago. Her record was that she had made the distance as a swimmer nonstop, 102 miles from Bahama to Florida. Now, she was trying to break that by 1 mile, going 103 miles from Cuba to Florida. Are you familiar with the story?
I've seen a little bit of it, Bill, and it is pretty impressive.
Yes.
For anybody, let alone at that age.
Yes, she's 61, and she said, "Who's to tell me that I can't do that?" You and I admire that spirit and that determination. Now, looking this morning on the internet, as I always do to get the day going, start to see what's happening, I noticed that she did have to call off this quest after 29 hours. But hey, Christina, how many people of any age can swim consecutively for 29 hours?
I think that's pretty awesome in itself.
That's right. That's right. I liked her statement a couple of days ago in the news. She said, 60 is the new 40, and I'm out to prove it. And you and I and our guests today know that it is true that age is a case of mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
It's just a number that people apply to you. Okay, we're going to segue now to someone who also knows about breaking boundaries. In fact, she told me she'd been ice skating recently with her 8-year-old granddaughter. God bless her for that. We're welcoming Barbara J. Peters, a relationship counselor, highly referred to me. She's the author of books on marriage and relationships. She's been a guest on many programs. Barbara, welcome to the Communication Corner.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we have been as well. Barbara, in the last couple of days, I had someone make a statement to me, and they were very serious. They said, "I wish that before I had gotten married, I had not read Harlequin romance books." And I said, "Why?" She said, "Because that's what I thought marriage was going to be about." She said, "I really think that reading those two books ruined my first two marriages." How would you respond? Are our expectations unrealistic because of movies and novels and fairy tales?
Absolutely. The expectations can set you up for failure or can set you up for success. I do believe that we need realistic expectations when we're getting into something as serious as marriage.
And it's not all fairy tales and they lived happily ever after. In fact, one of the things I noticed as I was looking at your LinkedIn site this morning, one of the posts that you made was you said marriage is work.
Absolutely. That word seems to turn a lot of people off in my practice when I suggest that there is work to be done. because they think that when you get married, you just get married and you
it's play,
say
it's
I
fun.
Do and there it is and that's it. They can go on to bigger and better things now. That's not true. And that's why they end up in my office.
Yes, yes. And one of the things we want to do today is to talk about what would be realistic expectations. And you're going to help us find out when you confront problems, which invariably you're going to, how do you handle them? Do you just say, this isn't like a Harlequin romance and I'm out of here? No, there are better solutions than that. Something else that was in the news recently that I would like to bring up. Actress Cameron Diaz, who I will have to admit is pretty good eye candy, but I'll have to also say that her comments about marriage, since I'm a person who is in a long-time marriage, a richly rewarding marriage, her comments about marriage turn me off, and I'd like to know what you think about them. She said recently, marriage is dead. And here's what she went on to explain. She said, I think we have to make our own rules. I don't think we should live our lives and relationships based off of old traditions that don't suit our world any longer. Well, Barbara, you're a professional relationship counselor. How do you respond to her assessment of marriage, saying that marriage is dead, it's outmoded, it's obsolete, we don't need boundaries anymore?
Well, for one thing, actors and actresses lead a much different life than many of us. They don't have the time, they don't put into the marriage what really needs to be in there. And when you look at your marriage and it hasn't worked, or, you know, you're in a divorce, that's a good thing to say. Now, if marriage were dead, I wouldn't see all the people in my office that are trying to save their marriages, because when they come in to me with all their problems, and the first question I ask is, do you want to save this marriage? The answer is always yes.
Or else they wouldn't be there.
Marriage is alive and living, but it is in the eyes of the beholder how you look at it. If you've had a bad one, and if you don't, you know, think you're going to have any more, you are tending to negativize it. And you say what you need to say. But marriage is not dead.
Well, it reminds me of one of my favorite statements. Don't call the world dirty because you forgot to clean your glasses.
True.
We all see through our own glasses, through our own perception. I guess one of the things I would tag on to what you're saying is about an actor or an actress or any celebrity, and we could mention Arnold Schwarzenegger or anyone we want to. These are people who are not enjoying life unless it's revolving around them individually. They're not known as givers. I mean, that's not their way of living. Fortunately, there's some long-term exceptions to that. Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward, I think, were married more than 60 years. As I remember, I believe James Garner and his wife are in a long-time marriage. Robert Stack and his wife had a long-time marriage. Bob Hope and Dolores. So it's not impossible. It's probably just more difficult for people who want everybody to give them applause and attention, including their mate.
Well, I once heard a definition of love, and it was real simple, called time spent. And I love it, because what else can you give but your time?
Mm-hmm.
And when you are in roles as actors or actresses and you're away so much and not connected a lot, you don't have that time. And it's very difficult to give to your spouse and get from your spouse what you need without being spent, without spending time.
And I guess something we hadn't even plan to talk about, but there's so many marriages now because of the economy, which are long-distance marriages, where one of the couple has to go work in a distant city, the other one has a job in the current city, can't leave, they can't sell the house, we don't have the mobility that we once had. So many people are having to deal with, how do you sustain a marriage relationship when you are not together 24/7.
We are very fortunate. We now have the internet. We now have mm-hmm. texting. We now have Facebook. We now have many ways to keep in touch. But that is a very, very real problem. But you can work that out, too. You do have to make time. You do have to figure out how you're going to stay connected. staying connected is very important in a long-distance relationship of any kind.
One more bit of technology we can mention there is Skype, where the couple can see each
other
as they talk. It's not just the old-timey telephone thing. And speaking of the old-timey telephone, you and I were very grateful for cell phones today as you were driving in, and we were able to connect, and I could give you directions to the station. You told me where you were, what landmarks you were seeing. I could pick up from that. Gosh, we couldn't have done that just a few years ago.
I don't know how I lived without a cell phone. I keep looking at all these people walking around in cars. Everybody's got one. And I wonder, what was it like without it?
Well, we had to have a pocket full of quarters. We had to, we had to stand in line at a phone booth. We had to hope that the phone booth still had a directory with it, that there was no line of people there, all those things which slowed us down. I love the technology.
But actually, this is what we're talking about, connection.
Yes.
People are connected all the time.
That's right.
And we're connected for all kinds of reasons, just for our jobs, but for all kinds of reasons.
Well, let me mention something that happened, and you and I said we were going to share some personal anecdotes, because that's what we're all about. Yesterday, and you're mentioning the cell phone reminds me of it. Yesterday, my wife was out driving around. I was busy at work in my office at the computer. She calls. I recognize her number. I wonder, has she had car problems or what? And she called and said, I just called to say I love you. How great is that?
Fabulous. Those are the real, those are the things that count. Those are the small gestures that can make a relationship, whether it's long distance, whether it's right here, count. I often tell my clients, send a text message during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. How are you doing? Be connected in some way, because that's what's important.
Doesn't have to be flowers and candy, just your voice or a text message. Those advantages we have now that we didn't used to have. Something else that I'd like your expert opinion on as a relationship counselor. One thing that's made headlines so frequently is that it's almost unthinkable, a trend that's taking place now. Many years ago, if a couple passed the 25-year mark of marriage, that was usually a milestone and they would stay married permanently. Now, however, the more I read and the more I see in the media, there are couples that are divorcing after 30, 40, 45 years of marriage. How do you account for that, Barbara?
For one thing, I think people are coming to terms more and more with their own happiness now. They also realize that longevity is, people are living longer, and people can do more and have more years to enjoy life.
So in previous times, if somebody were 65 and they were in a bad marriage, they think, well, heck, I can stand this for five more years. But now they might have 25 more years.
Absolutely. And I also stayed married for many reasons for children. When you're married 30, 40 years, your children now are pretty much in their own marriages like mine are, or on their own, and they're not there. It's the two of you. And you turn around and you look at each other and all of a sudden, where are you? What do you have together anymore? Because so many times when the children leave, there isn't much else.
Nothing else to talk about.
So they find that they may not even like who they're with. They may not even know who they're with. And so all of a sudden, their own personal happiness, what am I doing here? Why am I staying? Is it just because I'm supposed to stay? So I think that your own personal happiness and your own longevity and getting the most, I guess, bang for your bucks out of your 1,440 minutes a day makes somebody sit back and say, you know what? It's my life. I've got to see what I need. Now, I am a marriage advocate. I do want to say that. I help people stay married. That is my job, and I love it. I'm passionate about it. But I do see a lot of this now, and I don't advocate an unhappy life. So on one hand, when I'm saying, yes, save your marriage, stay married, because I do believe in the traditional marriage vow, I don't believe in being miserable. So it's a real difficult situation. but I do see it a lot.
And do you help people decide what is the best decision for them in their circumstance?
I don't do that. I help them
see. You help them. That's correct.
The pros and cons of, look, here's where you are. I will never say to somebody, well, I don't want to, I want to take never back. I will try not to say to somebody that they should not stay married unless there's abuse. We might go into that later. But I offer them, this is what it's like. Here's what you've got. You are making this choice.
Barbara J. Peters, our guest, Christina, talk to us, please.
Hello, this is your co-host, Christina Rhodes. We're delighted you're listening to the Communication Corner on WBCX, 89.1 FM, The Voice of Brenau. Your host is Dr. Bill Lampton. In the Communication Corner, we talk about the topics you have been talking about, and we bring in guest experts who will help clarify the issues. Our guest today is relationship counselor and author Barbara J. Peters of nearby Cumming, Georgia. Whether you're married or planning to be married, her guidelines for marriage will benefit you tremendously. We remind you to check Dr. Bill's blog later today. You'll find this photo with Barbara, a description of the interview content, and the podcast of the entire interview. Here's that blog link, thecompletecommunicator.com. Again, if you're going to write that down, thecompletecommunicator.com.
Thank you, Christina. And Christina, while your network quality voice is going there, it's cranked up now, it's ready to talk. I think you had a question you wanted to ask Barbara because of the fact that you're expecting your first child. And what kind of impact is that going to have on marriage?
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I would really like to know what kind of impact that would have, Barbara. We are expecting a little girl in December.
Oh, how awesome. I've had two girls. They're absolutely fabulous. I'm a girl person. Then my daughter went and had a boy, and I didn't know what to do. When I had a babysit for him, I freaked. I was afraid to change his diaper. At any rate, it will enrich your relationship wonderfully. But I encourage you very much to stay connected with your husband. Have date night. Stay in love. Don't make your new addition the entire relationship. I see a lot of that in my couples, that once children come, the husband and wife forget each other. And that would be something that I would love to see not happen.
Well, thank
you so
much.
I hope that helps.
That's great advice.
To what extent does having a child enrich a marriage, Barbara?
Oh, that's a question that, as I could speak for hours. Children are amazing. They are an extension of you and your husband. They help you see another creation. They make you live life through them at times, which I guess is good and not good. They're just an amazing addition.
By the way, I've got two daughters, too. So I'm very happy Christina is starting out with a little girl.
So am I. Do you have a name for her already?
We've got a couple we're thinking of, but we've decided that we're going to meet her first before we pick
I
for sure.
I love it.
Well, we're all excited about it. All of us are excited. Barbara, to what extent is this current economy weakening marriage commitments? I mean, my gosh, we've got nationwide, almost 10% unemployment. It's in that range, more than 9% in Georgia. We've all seen in the last 2 days what has happened to the stock market. We know people, I've even heard of situations where people wanted to divorce, but they couldn't because they couldn't sell their house, so they continued to live together in the same house. Marriage is demanding and difficult even during the best of times. What are you seeing in your conversations with couples and even in your own observation about how the current economic pressures are affecting couple relationships?
For one thing, it's making a couple who's contemplating marriage take a hard look at money. People are very concerned now about being employed and coming into marriage not having debt. A person's relationship with money can be very influential in forming a new relationship. Now, for those that are already married, financial reasons play a big role. It may keep people together that shouldn't stay together, that really don't want to be together, but they have no way out. They have to stay together.
They can't afford two residences.
No. There are sometimes people stay together living in the same house but sort of separate and do their own thing because they can't financially make it. So that's what they have to do. It does keep people together that may not be together for the right reasons. They may also stay together until the economy improves, in which case then they may split. But it definitely does have an effect on...
Sometimes in the popular media, we hear rankings of what really causes problems in marriages. And sometimes you see number one might be, and the top two or three might be money or sex or in-laws. What, in your opinion, where would you rank economics?
I would rank it pretty high. But, of course, the most important thing that I see is communication as far as what keeps people together. Mm-hmm. Studies have shown that the more economic stress men and women have, the less happy they are in their marriages, because it is a bone of contention. It is an easy argument to have.
Especially when you start blaming each other.
Oh, they love to do that.
You shouldn't have bought this. Why don't you have a job? Why aren't you making more money?
Exactly. And then with the... Nowadays, with mostly two-parent incomes, there are increasing demands on the roles of the family. So while the two people are working and they have children, they have to mix those elements together. And it does add even more stress because they have to work, they have to make the money, but yet they have kids that have to go to soccer and gymnastics and swimming, and it becomes a lot of stress. So the money ends up becoming a stress that they need it.
And one of the real difficulties is that many people who 10 years ago might have done some very careful planning, budgeting, saving, investing in stocks, getting good jobs, through no fault of their own, their circumstances have changed drastically. And the real challenge is, can you as a couple adjust to those pressures? Can you adjust your spending? And again, we get back to your expectations. Staycations have replaced vacations. Yes, I've worked hard all year, but maybe we're not going to the Caribbean this year. Maybe we're going 90 miles away where it doesn't cost as much.
Being creative with what you do is really part of it. Come with new solutions on how to do those kinds of things, and they can be done. I often talk about dating. My couples will say, well, we can't afford a date. A movie and a babysitter costs $50. Well, I go, do you have a backyard? Oh, yeah, we have a backyard. We have one of those. I said, well, put your kids to sleep. Have a picnic. Have a date in your backyard. They have to be creative. Mm-hmm. It's not only money that you need to do these things. You've got to have the creativity, and you've got to have the motivation and the enthusiasm.
Those are key words for a marriage. Creativity, motivation, and enthusiasm. We talked at the outset, Barbara, about expectations and how harlequin romances can throw us off on that. So let's get to the topic now of premarital counseling. How much does that really help a couple for marriage? Is it really possible to learn information, useful information about marriage, because you sit down and talk with a relationship counselor about what it's going to be like? How helpful is that, really?
I love this question, because I do believe in premarital counseling. However, it's only as good as who delivers it and how honest you decide to be. If you are just going to say yes, 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 because you want to get married and have the person sign off on, okay, you've completed your six-week course or your four-hour course, no, it's not going to be very helpful. If you go into it with honesty, if you go into it with somebody who's going to help you hone in on the issues that might prove a problem later on in your relationship, you may get some good advice. But you have to be willing to hit the ground running and say, this is how I am, and the other person how they are, and target those. And then, on top of that, look at how this couple's communicating with each other. Because it isn't just good enough to give them, okay, this is what you're going to have an issue with later on, but they need to know how to have that issue. If they don't know how to discuss that issue or how to work it through, it doesn't matter that they have it. So premarital counseling is only as good as how honest the people are and who's delivering it and whether they are in there for the right reasons, not just to sign off, have somebody sign off.
Yes, it can't be something just perfunctory or routine or mother said I ought to do this or my church said I ought to do this. You really have to go in there open and very candid. Because, for example, if the young lady says, I expect a perfectly clean house and I want my husband to help with the housework, and the young man says something like, yeah, I'll do that, but he doesn't really mean it, that's going to be a problem when they do set up housing together after the wedding.
And also, there are cases, I have a couple right now, where the issues they're presenting, and I don't want to go into those issues, are ones that may not be able to be resolved. So what I have discussed with this couple is, if these can't be resolved the way you like it, can you accept this? Because we don't have any insurance that this is going to go away once you say I do. So if this is how your spouse is going to be, are you able to accept this in the future? That's very important. Sometimes premarital counseling could end a marriage from taking place.
But if that's better than a divorce later
Absolutely. On. Absolutely. This couple is now struggling with the person who may not be able to accept it, whether this person can. I'm not even using he or she here. I don't want to give anything away. So,
how about this? We've heard this all our lives. Do opposites attract? And if they do they stay together?
I love that question. I'm a New Yorker. I'm from Long Island, New York. I'm married to a Southerner. How more opposite can you get? I don't say y'all. I don't eat what's given to me when it comes in a restaurant. I send it back if it's not good.
You don't care about barbecue or NASCAR?
Not really. but I do think that opposites can do great. I don't think we want a clone of ourselves. I don't think that would work. I think opposites bring enrichment, bring something to the relationship. But I think there's the big part of opposites attracting is acceptance, like being accepted for who you are. I'm accepted that I am this quick New Yorker that multitasks and that I talk and interrupt people. Well, he doesn't like that, but I do it anyway. And I accept that the Civil War is in the lower level of my house. And that's how it is. We have two cars, and somebody said we need a Mason-Dixon line in the middle of the garage because mine says one New York girl on the license plate, and he has the flag or the, I mean, it's true. But yes, I do believe opposites can attract, can stay together.
One thing about opposites attracting, and I can say this from my own marriage, is you may be opposite to begin with, but it's amazing over a series of decades how possibly those opposite characteristics might not still be around. Not that either one tried to force them. And this brings me to say this, Barbara. Every now and then when I'm directing a communication seminar, I will say to someone, do you really think that you can change the personality of your boss? And some will say, I'll hope so. And I say, well, did you change the personality of your mate when you got married? You really don't change someone else. You'd better not try it. That's not going to do anything but bring resentment. If someone changes on their own over the decades, which they invariably do, you welcome that, you applaud it, you accept it. But we really don't and shouldn't try to mold somebody else, should we?
Absolutely not. That's where acceptance comes in. Acceptance is a very big piece of the pie. And as far as things over the years, you know, you changing together, I think what's happening is people are learning to accept more each other for who they are. And that way the relationship can work.
Speaking of acceptance, we've got to accept Christina back into the conversation now as she does a station ID for us.
Thank you so much for tuning in, listeners. This is your co-host, Christina Rhodes, and we're delighted you're listening to the Communication Corner on WBCX, 89.1 FM, the voice of Brenau. Your host this morning and every morning on the Communication Corner is Dr. Bill Lampton. And in the Communication Corner, we talk about the topics you have been talking about, and we bring in guest experts who will help clarify those issues. Our guest today is relationship counselor and author Barbara J. Peters of nearby Cumming, Georgia. And whether you're married or planning to be married, her guidelines for marriage will benefit you tremendously. We remind you to check Dr. Bill's blog later today. You'll find his photo with Barbara, a description of the interview content, and the complete podcast of this interview. Here's that blog link, thecompletecommunicator.com. If you need that again, thecompletecommunicator.com. Stick with us. We'll be just a quick break. To contact WBCX, you can call 770-538-4744, or you can visit us on the web via Facebook, Twitter, and our website at brenau.edu/WBCX.
My name is Sue Smith. I'm 38 years old, and I work at a graphic design company, which is funny because I couldn't even draw a stick figure when I was a kid. But I met someone who told me, you know what, you can do anything. And if the teenage me were here, she'd tell you,
I wouldn't be into drawing and art if it wasn't for big brothers, big sisters. Most kids from my neighborhood don't get into art. They get into trouble. But I was lucky because my big sister showed me early on that I didn't have to be like most people. And to the young me,
that meant a lot. My big sister's name is Sheila, and Sheila is the reason that this 8-year-old grows up to have an amazing job as a graphic designer.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child, and that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Senior Issues is a radio show devoted to promoting quality issues to help our seniors maintain or improve their quality of life. Also, the show could help those with seniors in their family be aware of the various issues that would affect both them and their loved ones. Showtime is 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Thursday, and yes, we are live. We will cover a wide range of subjects over the course of time. If you have a subject that you would like discussed, or if you know of an event that our listening audience should be aware of, call me at 770-380-9727. This is Charles White, Certified Senior Advisor. I hope that we can add you to our listening audience.
Extraordinary Lives from Brenau University.
For 21 years, I've worked on a Trident nuclear submarine. It's been an amazing adventure. I've dipped my feet in the Mediterranean Sea. I helped fight and win the Cold War. I've lived nearly 4 years of my life deep underwater. Now at age 40, I'm coming up for air, retiring from the Navy and starting a whole new life in the business world. To smooth the transition, I earned an MBA from Brenau University. Brenau let me step out of my Navy comfort zone and interact with working adults from all backgrounds. I feel a new sense of curiosity and a great sense of confidence. People say you only have one life to live. Not true at all. Life starts all over again at Brenau University. Get ready to start your next life, the extraordinary life.
Now with two Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online. Register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brenau University, extraordinary lives.
Hi, I'm Gail Dunn, and I'd like to invite you to join me on Garage Gab every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. On Garage Gab, we'll find a way to help you solve your car dilemmas and save you money. Again, that's 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings here on The Voice of Brenau.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home, where I belong.
These days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Making Home Affordable from the U.S. government has already helped many struggling homeowners. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home. I'm home.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Hello, this is Tamara Clark, hostess of Getting to the Point, a program where we explore how to better our health through Chinese medicine practice and theory. We cover topics like pain management, stress relief, and various other issues of emotional and physical health. The show is called Getting to the Point. It's only here on 89.1 WBCX. You can hear it live Wednesdays from 12 to 1, and we do rebroadcast it Friday mornings at 6 a.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. That's Getting to the Point. Tune in and be healthy.
Hello and welcome back to the second half of the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton, with our scintillating informative guest, Barbara J. Peters, relationship counselor, and also with my star broadcaster, Christina Rhodes. Christina, we've talked before about your husband, Jacob, and one of the great compliments that you pay him and that you pay your relationship is when you talk about you married your best friend. Elaborate on that for us, please.
Yes, Bill and Barbara, when I do talk about Jacob, my husband, I do say that he's my best friend. I enjoy spending time with him more than just about anybody, and we enjoy so many different hobbies and pastimes together, and I feel very fortunate about that. And we, just a little side note, we've been known each other since we were 10 and we're best friends all through high school. And so we established that part of our relationship, long before we got married. How helpful will you, do you think this is for my marriage or any marriage moving forward?
I think it's very helpful. My daughter married her best friend, or he was the best friend in high school as well. And during high school, he used to come over and she used to say, well, we're having Dave night tonight. We're going out with Dave. And all the girls would go out with Dave, and that he was their he was one of her best buddies. And then they got together and he asked her to marry him. And they've been married now, maybe 11 years. And that's the granddaughter that I go ice skating with. And I do believe that it's a great foundation for any marriage, because think of what a friend is. A friend is somebody who accepts you for who you are, who thinks about you and wants to give you happiness, who is there for you when you're sad. You want those things. You want the friendship as well as the lover. You want the husband. You want everything. So I think that people who don't have that friendship are missing a lot, and it may not really go the distance. So I do believe it's a necessary quality. I think you're very lucky to have it, and I know she is.
That's wonderfully stated. And what I pick up most from what you're saying, and that I like a lot, is that friends are non-judgmental. And we get back to a word that you've used several times, which is such a key, and that is friends are accepting.
Absolutely. And there's another part of that that's really important, and that's you need to be your own best friend.
Mm-hmm.
It has to start there. You've got to think of yourself that way and do for yourself the way you would do for a friend.
Yes, we've had several guests on where we talk about self-talk and how important that is, what you say to yourself when you start every day. Christina, share your motto with us. I think it's so vital.
I end every radio show with this motto: happiness is yours to choose or reject, so embrace it. Sing out loud, hug somebody, smile for me, and don't forget to dance to the music.
I love that. I think I saw that when I was looking at your site. And I'm under the impression, well, not under the impression, I believe that happiness is an inside job, meaning you do it yourself. You don't expect anybody else to make you happy. They can't. And that we talked about expectations early on. You have to be happy, and somebody can add to your happiness, sure, but you have to know that, and you have to get it from within you.
Absolutely.
I love your mantra.
Thank you.
Yes, and she lives it, too. Okay, talking about friends and relating that to marriage brings me to this question, Barbara. Let's talk for a minute about honesty. Friends are honest with each other, okay? If your mate is your friend, Barbara J. Peters, relationship counselor, should we tell our spouse everything, or is it better to keep some things private? And I'll give a pretty common example here. Let's say that Christina's on Facebook, and she gets a message from an old boyfriend from long ago that she hasn't heard about. Should she tell Jacob about this? I mean, that'd be total honesty, wouldn't it? So what's your advice? What do we tell and what do we not tell?
Facebook's a problem. But as far as, let me go to the question, telling all, it depends on what the needs are. If you did something, you know, in your childhood or your first boyfriend that doesn't affect your relationship now, that's sort of benign, no, I don't really see that you have to be an open book. I think that people, we should be able to have some of our own secrets. But if they're going to hurt somebody, if they impact the relationship, and then they need to be disclosed. However, I think another thing is that you need to know your spouse or significant other. What do they need? Do they need to know a lot? Do they have to have that information in order to feel trust? That's another piece, is what they need to know. If an old boyfriend contacted, you know, you on Facebook, you have to know whether your husband would want to know that. You have to know whether you have a need to tell your husband that. You have to know how it's going to be in the big picture. I try to stay away from black and white all the time and say, yes, you must always tell. No, you must not tell. This is what you should keep away. This is what you shouldn't. Because I think that's very, very, it depends on the people involved in the relationship. I certainly think that if it's impacting the relationship, if it's important, if it's a health issue, something that both of you need to work out, that's very important. But do I think that you need to be an open book? I really don't. I think that we are special, and we are supposed to have, if we're our own best friends, some things that we just want to keep to ourselves, as long as it isn't hurtful to the relationship.
Okay, thank you. Important question. In your writings about marriage, which I've read, Barbara, you explain, and I truly applaud this this comparison you make. You say, hey, we've got a car. We've got to take that car in for maintenance regularly. You know, the 3,000-mile checkup, the oil change, check the tires, rotate them if necessary. We've got a house. You've got to give maintenance to your house. In fact, Sandra and I just went through having our house painted. Rather expensive to do, but it was necessary to keep the place not only looking good, but to keep the wood in good shape. So we recognize that we've got to maintain a house. We've got to maintain a lawn. We've got to maintain a car. In what ways do you think we have to maintain a marriage? You use that analogy. I liked it.
Well, I think we need to maintain a marriage as is more important than even maintaining these other things. We pay attention to these other things because they're rather benign. Maintaining a relationship takes a little bit more effort than going dropping your car off for an oil check. But I think that I came up with a maintenance agreement in one of my books that says, you know, you get up in the morning and today you decide to make your marriage a priority. And you do. You do one thing to make that marriage a priority. I think that yearly anniversaries, you can renew these vows. You can say what you want, what you've loved in the past year, what you want in the next year. I really feel like we have to renew our licenses, professional licenses, driving licenses. We might have to take continuing education credits, or I can't have my LPC. Well, why don't we have to do that with our marriages? Why do we just feel that our marriage is just going to happen without any of that? So I totally agree with maintaining your marriage, and I love the maintenance agreement. I think it's something everybody should consider.
We said at the outset of our conversation today, it's work, and that includes maintenance work.
Absolutely.
Christina, remind our listeners, please, where we are, and tell us about next week's guest.
Today's interview with Barbara J. Peters is bringing us insights into what it takes to make a marriage lasting and rewarding. Next week, our guest will be Mike Banks, very well known in the Gainesville area as a former banker, chief development officer for Brunel University, civic volunteer, and now on the business school development staff at North Georgia College and State University. Mike was the very first guest we hosted on this program, and we're glad he will join us again next Tuesday. Again, you're listening to 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brunel. This is the Communication Corner. And now, back to the concluding conversation between Dr. Bill and Barbara J. Peters.
Mike Banks, be terrific to have him back. Mike is a tremendous communicator, well-known in the community. He'll be a great asset to the program. A great asset to our program today is Barbara J. Peters, relationship counselor. Something else that you say, Barbara, you warn couples against keeping tally of their mate's mistakes, almost like it's a game and, okay, here's how many points are scored against you right now, and you're in the losing category because of this that you've done or this that you haven't done. What's so harmful about that, Barbara, and what's a more constructive alternative?
Well, you need to focus on what's working. You need to focus on the positive. When you focus on somebody's negative, it pulls them down and they don't have any enthusiasm or motivation to do anything. I teach something called the criticism sandwich. I think that's a question that is great to go over, where when you don't like something your partner is doing and you like them to do it another way, you wrap it. It's your how you get that across. So you might start out with saying, you know, you are so great at helping me with the kids in the morning before I go to work. I really just so appreciate the effort because we both have to get out of the house. But, you know, when you pack their lunch and you forget to put in the snack, they come home at the end of the day and they just complain that they had no snack. So it would really be better if you could, you know, get the snack in there, you know, every day. But honey, you know, I don't know what I would do without you helping me in the morning. We just work so great as a team together. Now, what do you think that's going to do? That person's going to hear that much better. And he's going to know he does some good things. So it's going to make him want to get that snack in there the next day. And he's going to feel good about himself.
2/3 of what you said are complimentary and positive.
Exactly.
Interestingly enough, Barbara, when I teach business communication seminars, I bring this out in the way to manage people as well. I was in management myself for over 20 years. I found out that right away, knowing even from my own experience, people do not respond positively when all you do is say negative things to them. So find out something constructive that they have really achieved, center in on that, and say, you know, Christina, here's one way you could do it better, though. Let me make this suggestion to you. And that's so much better than calling Christina in and say, Christina, here's where you are really letting us down. The criticism sandwich, the compliments on each side, and the meaty, constructive comment that you make in the middle where some changes need to be made. I think that's very helpful. Something else that you recommend is that when couples have a problem, they need to talk about that problem quickly. Why? What's the advantage of that, and what are the disadvantages of not talking about it immediately?
Well, I use the term time is of the essence. It's in a real estate contract, I believe. Because when something comes up and it's distressing or bothersome, you want to talk about it immediately. When you hold something in, which a lot of people do, it festers and it can quickly turn into resentment. And resentment is one of the cornerstones of terrible, terrible marital conflict. So you want to be able to say something to discuss it as soon as possible. Time is not on your side in an argument. It is in a disagreement. It is best to get something
the bad feelings
on the table.
Fester. Yeah.
Yeah, and out. If you want to talk about it and it isn't appropriate, you can at least say, look, there's something I need to discuss. When is a good time for you? Can we discuss it in an hour, or get it over soon so that it doesn't sit there and then something else sits there on top of it and something else sits there on top of it. And you've got six things that you weren't able to talk about, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's too late.
It's quite destructive if one partner says to the other one, you know, 5 weeks ago, you said something to my mother that I don't like. That's not the way to approach it.
Absolutely. Not at all.
Not at all. I like to, another bit of advice that you give. You say, a successful marriage is not about finding the right person, but about being the right person. Elaborate on that for us. Explain that.
Well, why do we think second and third marriages don't work or don't work as well, and the divorce rate gets higher and higher?
That's something I had wanted to bring up. Let's touch on that for a minute. I've seen the statistics. They are startling. As I understand it, something like 50% of regular marriages, first marriages, fail. But when you get into second and third, it gets up to 60 and 75% when everybody was thinking, gosh, it's just this one person I'm with. That's the problem. But that wasn't the problem, the only problem.
Not at all, because you need to know who you are, and you need to be the best person you are to be in a relationship with somebody else. So you can't just say, well, okay, this one didn't work. I'm going to go find somebody else who isn't like that, who's going to, you know, fit the bill. But you're still the same. You've not changed between marriage one, two, three, or four. You are still you. So if you don't work on yourself and figure out what makes you tick and who you are and what your needs are and your values and what kind of person you want to be, it doesn't matter. It's probably not going to work.
One of my favorite writers, Barbara, is Ralph Waldo Emerson. And one of the passages of his I like so much is, he said, I boarded a ship to Europe. I took that long voyage. And when I got off the ship, I was still with me.
That's true. He was. That's who we are. We are still with ourselves,
yes,
all the way.
You don't get away from you. And then again, I'm sure in second and third marriages, not having been in one, but just from what I can guesstimate, you have a dating period there. And the dating period is just like it was with your first marriage. I mean, when you're dating that person who's going to be your second spouse or your third spouse, your first marriage, you had a dating time then. In dating time, we're all on our best behavior, are very close to our best behavior. Not that it's entirely pretense, but it's not reflective of what it's going to be like when you're under the same roof permanently, is it?
Not really. That's one of the pitfalls. People say, well, he was different and he changed. Well, we don't know that he was different. He might have been the same, but they changed. He might have been on his good behavior. And so that is a definite challenge for somebody, you know, the dating scene. But in the second marriage, you are going to have the dating as well, but I don't know that it's going to be the same way the dating was with the first, depending on how much time is between the marriages, depending on why the first marriage didn't work and how needy you are to get into another one, or why you're looking for that second one so fast. Sometimes people just can't be alone and they have to go into another one quickly. So there's a lot of variables in what kind of dating actually happens in a second or third marriage.
Do you have any rule of thumb guideline that you would tell a couple who has been married before? They're planning to get married now. Do you have any suggested time that they should wait between the end of one marriage and the start of another? I've heard some marriage counselors say possibly it should be a year or 2 years.
I've heard that too, Bill. And I don't know that I'm going to set a time frame. I think it depends, again, on the two people, how quickly they do get to know each other, whether they've gotten to know themselves well. It's such a variable. I certainly don't think that it should happen in a few weeks or a few months, but I don't know the magic number. I think they have to work on themselves and know who they are and examine all the data and find out enough about the other person and do it smart. And if there's kids involved, it's even more complicated. So the 1 to 2 years, it sounds okay, but I'm not going to sign on the line for that one.
Every case is individual.
Right.
Right. You said, as we started our conversation, that you are a believer in marriage. You're a proponent of marriage. In fact, you refer to marriage as the gift of a lifetime. You're very positive toward marriage. As I read more about marriage relationships, including your works on it, one of the things that keeps coming across is how marriage, a good marriage, a mutually beneficial marriage, is carries so many advantages for people. Research has shown that physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, we're better off. Marriage has many advantages in addition to just giving us a great relationship with an individual, doesn't it?
Absolutely. In many, many ways, marriage is better for health. There are studies that that have been done at several universities, empirical studies, and that all point to married people are happier. They're even saying that the JAMA research finds that cures for cancer are significantly more successful when a patient is married. And being married was comparable to being in an age category of 10 years younger. Their cure for cancer. Smokers, they're suggesting that there were a man that was smoking as compared to a man that wasn't smoking. If he's married, he's going to live longer. There are alcoholics, problem drinkers, that being married is going to be better than if, even though we know that that's not good for you, than if they're not. So this goes into a wide variety of aspects, that the support that you get from being with another person, I believe, is the main ingredient here, that you're not in this alone, that there is somebody that you can share with, that you can, that is there for you, that you have a give and take relationship with, is why they are saying all of this.
As I've dealt with many executives in my work over the years, something else that I've noticed is, and this again is confirmed by major studies of top professional people, there's one characteristic that almost every top executive has, and that is a long-range marriage.
Interesting.
There are not many of them who have been in serial marriages.
And, you know, they're also making the distinction that it has to be marriage, not even living together, in the studies. And I felt that was interesting. Because living together, you're certainly giving support to somebody, but they're saying that it's marriage that is giving the health benefits.
Barbara, I've known people, and I guess all of us have, who were married. They didn't get along. They divorced. They got remarried to each other. What's been your experience as to what are the odds of that working?
That depends on what's happened in between the first marriage and the second to each other. It depends on why they were they got divorced the first time. I mean, if they got divorced the first time because one of them was alcoholic and they're going to get married again, well, is that person still alcoholic? I mean, there are so many variables as to whether that's going to work again. So you have to look at all of that. It can work, but you have to know where you are and know what's happened on the interim and know if some of those issues are resolved.
Barbara J. Peters, it has been a remarkable experience having you with us, and I know that many people married, engaged, or considering marriage have benefited so much from your comments. We appreciate your being with us today so much.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Reminding our listeners that later on today, you can go to my blog. Christina has given you that web address earlier, thecompletecommunicator.com. On my blog, there'll be a photo of me with Barbara. There will be a written description of our conversation today. There also will be the podcast of the entire 60 Minutes, and this is a permanent link. Reminding you again, too, that this program, which airs on Tuesday morning, also airs on Thursday morning at 6 a.m. Would love for you to have us contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Station number 770-534-4744. My cell number 678-316-4301. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. Be with me next week in the Communication Corner with our guest, Mike Banks. Thanks for being with us today.